This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. The show is brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more. And we thank them for partnering with the show to bring you these great interviews. Now, my guest today is Barney Harmsa, Executive Chairman of Paratus Group. Paratus is a fascinating telecoms infrastructure company founded and headquartered in Namibia, and it's fast becoming a major player in the digital infrastructure business across southern Africa. It was founded in 2005, has evolved from a small ISP into a full-service network operator with an extensive fiber backbone, data centers, satellite infrastructure, and international links, including submarine systems and satellite. Paratus provides enterprise connectivity, cloud voice and data center services, and has invested heavily in cross-border networks to connect landlocked regions with subsea cables. Barney Harmsa is Executive Chairman of Paratus Group. Good to see you. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Duncan, for the opportunity.
It's a pleasure. I've been wanting to meet you for many years, and thank you for flying up from Cape Town to come and do this interview today. Barney, tell me a bit about Paratus Group. It's been around for 20 years. It's the 20th year this year.
Actually, 22 this year.
Oh, is it 22? Mm-hmm. I had you
founding. I'll get to the difference just now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I believe you actually started at Angola. But you are really a Namibian founded group. But your first business was in Angola. Tell us that story.
Well, as far as the shareholding is concerned, more than 90% of the entire group is still in Namibian hands.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we consider it to be a Namibian company, or at least the head office in Windhoek, Namibia.
It's listed in Namibia, isn't it?
It's listed.
Yeah.
We listed in October 2017 in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, middle of the year, June 2018, we had a group consolidation. That's mm-hmm. when we brought all the group companies across Africa under one umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
You correctly pointed out, we actually started in Angola in 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know that other criminal, Miles October, that you speak to on a regular basis?
Sorry, who's that?
Miles October, our chief marketing officer. He was actually on the flight with me from Cape Town. But Miles and Rolf in the old days, back in the day, first went to Angola.
Yeah, it's the three of you who founded the business, yes?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
And soon after that, so Angola was first,
mm-hmm.
Struggled, walked the streets.
Why did you go there first?
Opportunity.
Okay.
So the civil war just ended. And
and you were three Namibians?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, Miles is Capetonian.
Okay.
All right. But
they are a nationality of their own.
Yeah, they are a different bunch. And so it was Miles, but just maybe a little bit back, most of the people, or a lot of the original founders,
mm-hmm.
comes from the old UUNET Internet Africa. I don't know if you can remember.
I do remember UUNET, yes, of course.
So that's where we were originally, but then we decided to go on our own. Consequently, UUNET became DataTech and the rest, Verizon, WorldCom,
yes,
and so on. But
eventually, I think, was acquired by MTN.
MTN Business today is what UUNET was 25 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's
been through a lot of change over there.
So 2003, Angola.
Yeah.
And then in the next year, in December 2004, we started rolling out secretly.
Mm-hmm.
We started rolling out the Namibian network. So if you have to count the years, if you take into consideration when we stepped down from the airplane in Angola, up until today, it's been 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
So Namibia, we're only counting from March 2005 when we were officially incorporated in Namibia.
Ah.
But like I said, we started building the network in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very special year for us in Namibia. So actual fact, Namibia would be 20 years this year,
mm-hmm.
from March 2005 until 2025, would be 22 years. And that goes in conjunction with our commercial launch of our mobile data network, our mobile network
mm-hmm.
in Namibia, now the 2nd of September. So now the cat is out of the bag. You are the first person that officially knows, as far as the media is concerned, about the launch on 2nd of September in Namibia of our mobile data network.
Oh, wow. Wow.
We're going to take on the competition.
I don't know much about the Namibian mobile market. There's one dominant operator, isn't there, an MTC?
MTC, and they sit with 95%.
95%.
Yeah.
And how many challenges are there in that market, apart from
From them being the dominant monopoly?
Yeah. There are one or two others, aren't there?
Yeah. In terms of mobile operators, only Telecom Namibia and MTC.
Okay. And Telecom Namibia is state-owned.
State-owned, like MTC, is 100% state-owned.
Oh, it's also state-owned. Okay. So this will be the first private
operator venturing into that space.
Oh, wow. Wow. Did you have to go through quite a complex regulatory process to get the license?
No, we did that already 20 years ago when we started applying for the licenses. Back in the day, was the Namibian Communications Commission.
Yeah.
2011, we had our official regulator enacted, CRAN, Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia, mm-hmm. in 2011. And at that time, we could apply already for a full ECS, ECNS license, which gives us all the rights and privileges that any other operator would have. So
sounds like a very similar sort of licensing structure to South Africa.
Yeah, and then as soon as you obtain that license, what remains is to grow the company until such a time that you can actually, grow the company through various means. You steal money, you rob businesses, you act like a pirate. No, I'm just joking. But anyway, so it was basically overdraft facilities, project financing, overdraft facilities, loans, and the first true break we got was when, like I said, in 2018, when we consolidated the entire group, then Capricorn Group mm-hmm. in Namibia came on board, mm-hmm. and they took a significant share in the holding company. Mm-hmm. It's the umbrella company.
Paratus Group.
Paratus Group, mm-hmm. correct. So that was our first good break. In all the time that we've been operating. Now, at that stage, 2018, you can imagine starting in 2003 and working your way up all the way to 2018. That was the first real break we got.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not been a...
So has it been bootstrapped up to that point?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's been organic growth.
Okay.
Never had access to real money mm-hmm. or funding.
Even through the listing?
After the listing, we finally came right.
Right.
And it's now a different organization. Remember, we started with zero. We started with nothing.
Yeah.
Just the clothes on our backs.
And literally walking the streets of
walking the
Angola.
Streets, selling printers and installing firewalls and loading
antivirus. Why did the three of you get together in the first place? Were you
because
just
of our old junior days, we were together.
And you were friends and got on and decided we should do business together.
It's been forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, like I said, it was organic growth. And today, excuse me. So originally, the companies in the countries were Angola and Namibia. And then we branched out. We went to Zambia and South Africa. We bought that Scalum from Maxwell Technologies, Kali. but it was a good deal at the time. It still looks like a good deal today. So South Africa and Botswana and Mozambique, Zambia. So in the first bunch of countries, we're talking about seven countries. Mm-hmm. And then recently in the last, let's say 2 years, we branched out more. And like Martin Cox, our chief commercial officer, have alluded, we're now in 15 countries, mm-hmm. but we're only focusing on sub-equatorial Africa.
Okay.
There's over a half a billion population just in sub-equatorial mm-hmm. Africa, and that's enough market size for us to focus on.
Yes.
Not that we're ever going to get to, all the populations, but it's a good market size to focus on.
And in many of these markets, telecoms infrastructure is actually quite poorly developed, so there must be a mm-hmm. big market opportunity for...
Yeah,
for a company like Paratus,
you must make up your mind, Duncan. So in the beginning, as a startup, if you don't have infrastructure, you are reliant on the likes of Telkom South Africa, Telecom Namibia,
yeah.
Zamtel in Zambia, Angola Telecom in Angola, etc.
All protecting their turf, of course.
And what are you doing? You're basically renting from them and you're reselling it.
Yeah.
Until and remember in the beginning days. They also got into the business of ISPs.
Mm.
They were traditional telco companies. Mm. And so you get to a stage when you realize, okay, we can't depend on somebody else's network anymore. You need to start constructing your own.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that? Well, you go borrow money, and then you lay your first meter or your first kilometer of fiber, or you build your first base station. And then, unfortunately, the moment you lay your first kilometer of fiber or you build your first base station, you open a can of worms. Mm-hmm. We call it a monster. You know, you have to start. That monster needs feeding.
Mm-hmm.
So as we sit here today, since we started investing in own infrastructure, it has never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot stop. You have to continue with the investment into infrastructure. Otherwise, you're going to go under.
What is the first bit of infrastructure you put into the ground originally?
Mm-hmm. I think most notably, our WiMAX network in Angola.
Okay.
That was the first. And then soon after that, in the next year, our very first earth station or antenna, VSAT antenna, which we installed in Windhoek.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I think October 2008, we installed another big VSAT antenna
mm-hmm.
In Namibia. And and then afterwards, you know, you have to focus on all the sciences or the entire spectrum of what you want to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just going to stick to teleports. We've got teleports here in South Africa. Kali here in South Africa has got a very, very grand setup, definitely worthwhile visiting that. We've got a teleport in Namibia. We've got a significant teleport in Angola. We have one in Europe. And then except for that, you need to start connecting the dots on land.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to cross the borders.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only two companies like ourselves, two Pan-African telcos, that's really into the business of putting infrastructure across Africa. Mm. Only two of us. The one
you
other.
And Liquid.
Okay, you named them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to call the name because otherwise I would, promote Liquid. But anyway.
You just said it.
It's... Excuse me. I take my hat off to Liquid. We admire them. You know, we buy from them. They buy a little bit from us. But
right.
So we're in the same league where we invest in African countries and we build international links cross-border, not only in that country.
Mm-hmm.
And we build east-west, north-south.
Mm. You've just recently, I think last year sometime, completed the link from Johannesburg through to the coast of Namibia
uh-huh.
to connect to the Google Equiano cable.
True.
Is it difficult to lay fiber across borders? Is there a lot of red tape involved? Do you have to get regulators involved, or is it actually quite simple?
If you have the license already in that country or the countries that you want to connect,
no,
it's a simple process.
Okay.
Getting to those licenses, you must do that early on.
Right.
But to cross the borders later on, it's not a problem. Finding the budget,
mm-hmm.
that's usually the challenge.
Okay.
And then we've got relationships we've developed good relationships with a lot of contractors over the years in the various countries. And you just lay the fiber.
Mm-hmm.
It's either underground, which is almost double as expensive as going aerial
mm-hmm.
on poles, and you start laying the fiber. And like I said, it doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep on feeding that network. That network keeps on expanding.
Mm-hmm.
It never stops. And then eventually we got into data centers. Everybody knows what the data centers are up to or what it's going to do for our continent or, I suppose, for the whole world. The space for data required is almost insatiable,
mm-hmm.
Especially with AI also kicking off. And it's amazing. It's not amazing is the wrong word. I suppose astonishing or mind-boggling what has happened with AI in the last 12 to 18 months. It is crazy.
The scale of those data centers that are being built in America now.
If you look at what Mr. Musk and Amazon and Microsoft
and Zuckerberg at Meta as well.
Yeah, all of them. And I think one or two of them, Microsoft definitely won, and one other, they are buying old nuclear stations now, nuclear power stations, and powering them up again. So the data centers itself is bringing new challenges in terms of energy requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So where are your data centers located?
We've got in one in Lusaka, a grand state of the art. We've got one in Namibia, grand state of the art. We already have a first minor or smaller one in Angola and a second one in Angola. So we've got four prominent data centers
okay.
right now, world class.
Are those located, or some of those located at the landing stations for the undersea cables?
Not necessarily.
No.
In Luanda, obviously, it would be in Luanda at the coast where you've mm-hmm. got the landing stations. In Namibia, after we landed the Equiano cable, you must just have enough capacity running from the coast into your data center.
Yes.
In Windhoek, which is inland, and then obviously you must have backup routes as well.
Right.
In place. Then it's really not an issue where you place it.
Okay. So your data center's in
Windhoek, yeah, specifically.
Where does it land? In Swakopmund?
Swakopmund.
Okay. So it's this new operator that you're launching in Namibia, a mobile data operator, that's using the same license then that you got for your WiMAX network all those years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a bit about it and what your coverage is going to look like, what technology you're going to be using.
Okay. Most significant, I think there's two significant components that you have to consider.
Mm-hmm.
The first in my mind is the OSS BSS systems that you're using. So you're using brand new operational systems and business systems, which manages everything. And I mean everything. So we've actually just cut over last week, Saturday or Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's been working frantically yesterday. And there's obviously, and today, the next 2 weeks will be chaos. But we made the cut over.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Cerulean. That we're using as OSS BSS. That
Cerulean.
Cerulean, yeah. It's a listed company. They're doing very well. The next one is Nokia. So on the radio network, we use Nokia.
Mm-hmm.
And
why did you go with Nokia and not one of the Chinese vendors?
Why are you asking me political questions?
Is that a political question? I guess it is.
And we were very satisfied
okay. With
those relationships. And when you're talking about in-country, I suppose Namibia making that decision is to also protect the network. You must look at other operators around you. What are they using?
Mm.
Are they using specifically Chinese equipment and technology, which is not bad?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not. The pricing is also good.
Mm-hmm.
The Mandarin may be a little bit of a problem when it comes to communication.
Yeah.
But then as far as the country is concerned, if the two dominant players, the other players already using Chinese technology, you can't put the country at risk and use the third operator also. Mm-hmm. Also use Chinese technology. One day when that relationship is not working anymore, then the country's in trouble.
Mm.
And I'm just telling you how we see it and what it is. I mean, we cannot put our network or the country at risk by putting too many eggs in the same basket.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Okay, and so what technology are you deploying?
So the new mobile network is entirely based on the data network.
Mm-hmm. So 5G.
Yeah, and obviously we've got a few surprises built into that network, which is part of the new evolution of mobile data networks.
Okay,
we have invested just in the last 12 months. We've invested so far over 600 million rands into that network, and we're going to have to come up with another 600 million very soon.
Okay, are you focused on
the entire Namibia? So. So far.
Because a vast country, I presume you're not going to cover the whole thing.
It's big. And very sparsely populated.
Very sparsely.
And so originally you take Windhoek and you take all the major towns throughout Namibia, but basically all the towns.
Yeah.
And you look at the main routes and you cover those. And then as a next step, you set that up, get it going, get it working, and then find more money and you roll out the rest of the coverage areas.
Okay.
That's where we are. But like I said, the official launch will be the 2nd of September.
Okay. So you cover the towns.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't cover all the farmlands and everything else because it's just too divert, too far widespread. Away.
You cannot lay a 500 or a 1,000 kilometer fiber to a destination where there's no population or no uptake.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. But we've been installing a lot of fiber prior to launching this network in all our countries.
Mm-hmm.
Backhaul fiber and local consumer FTTX
as well. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have an FTX network in Namibia?
Yeah. Significant. Okay. Significant. Okay. I think just in Windhoek we've already passed, I think, 40,000 households.
Oh, wow.
But so the last thing for us was to after we saw that we had a head start on our fiber rollouts in more than one country. The last thing remaining in Namibia was then what's next? We scratched yet. Mobile. Okay. So now we're taking on the monsters. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Are they, in a market where there's one dominant player like that, are you expecting an uphill battle or do you think that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, it's going to be hell. They're not going to take this lying down or sitting back. They're not going to hold back on their punches. Yeah.
What's your opportunity there? Is it? Do you come in with a better data offering at a lower price?
We're not going to get into a price fight.
You're not?
No.
Okay.
No. Not at all. We'll be competitive where it matters. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, what distinguishes you from the others, from the rest, especially those guys with plenty of budget, there's only one differentiator, and that's service.
Mm.
When you're a private operator, and you've got, you know, we just over 1,000 people now in Africa.
Sure.
In those 7 countries mainly. We're still expanding. We just finished setting up the opcos in the other countries. So we're now in 15 countries. So let's include the other 8 that we recently added.
Mm-hmm.
We have over 1,100 people. We put food on the tables of easily 6,000-7,000 family members every day. That's still small. In Namibia, we only, I think 2 weeks ago, we were 254 staff. We're now probably more than 260 staff in Namibia. So it's private, attitude is right, passionate, small team.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all the ingredients that you have to be able to provide a good service. We don't have 10,000 employees yet. Okay? When we get there, I will not be there anymore. More people, more.
So, last question on your mobile data rollout. Then
I can see that piqued your interest.
Yeah, it did. which spectrum assets do you have in Namibia that you're going to use for this? Which frequency bands?
Gold spectrum, but we're still looking for more.
Okay.
I can't elaborate a lot on the spectrum right now. That's a bit of a trade secret.
Okay,
when we launch, we're in the lower end,
mm-hmm.
and then we're in a slightly higher end. Why? Because we want to reach on the lower end spectrum, we want to reach on the low end spectrum. Yep.
That's ideal in Namibia, where
exactly,
there's such fast distances.
Exactly. Yeah. So we, you know how it goes. If your reach is shorter, you can have more bandwidth throughput. Hmm. If your reach is further, then the bandwidth throughput is slightly less, but you've got a further reach.
So you put one tower up in Mariental, for example, and you cover the whole town, but in Windhoek.
And then we load different spectrum ranges on various base stations on the same tower.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Mm. That makes sense.
But as long as it works on this thing.
Yes.
Then we're in there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So building infrastructure like you're doing in Africa must be quite challenging. You must have some interesting anecdotes about rolling out infrastructure across some of these markets through deserts, through jungles, through all of it. What are some of the fun stories that you can relate over the last 20 years of interesting things that have happened to Paratus and its teams on the ground?
Big snakes, wild animals, felt fires, hostile villagers, broken down buckies in the middle of the forest. God knows where, whether it's in Zambia or in DRC. But there's some crazy. Look, the environment, obviously, in Africa present itself with some challenges. Mm. It's not easy. But you must not forget the whole bunch, everybody that's involved with the Paratus Group, mm-hmm. the original founders and the shareholders today were born in Africa. Okay, so it's not owned or run by offshore companies or foreigners. We were all born in this continent. We know how Africa works. We like to pick the places where they don't speak English and they drive on the wrong side of the road, because there we're going to have less South African interference. Now I said it.
Dropping some truth bombs here, right?
Kali, no disrespect. But so typically the South Africans would pick, you know, these East African countries where they speak English and drive on the correct side of the road.
Which is the most...
We love Middle Africa and West Africa.
Which is the most challenging market that you're in currently? DRC? Are you in the DRC?
We're now full on in the DRC.
Yeah.
But just an interesting fact, we've been delivering bandwidth in southern DRC, in Lubumbashi specifically, for more than 11 years already.
Oh, wow.
So through Namibia, through Zambia all the way into southern DRC. But in the last 2 years, we've been setting up proper shop and registering the company. We actually been in a relationship for a number of years in DRC, where we operate and maintain a section of fiber for the government through a partnership in okay. DRC. But it's not easy. The attraction about DRC is it's a very rich country.
Yes.
And but I think if you dig down the ground, you don't have to dig deep, and then you're going to find wealth, mm-hmm. especially in terms of natural resources. Mm-hmm. And you're either there or you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
So every country we've entered so far, it's been a long-term plan. Don't go there. Don't go to any of the African countries unless it's a long-term plan. If you're going as an opportunist, mm-hmm. you're going to see your ass. That's just how it is. But don't go in there with just a 5-year plan or so. Or say get stuff, okay? Don't leave because of the first tough experience. You know, you go through, in the various regions, you go through oil price changes, you go through copper price changes, you go through droughts, you go through political change. And these are the waves that you have to ride. I mean, you can't leave. If any of those don't play in your favor anymore, it's not a reason to go and leave everything behind. Plan is 10, 20 years, then do it. Otherwise, stay away.
Is it fairly easy to do business in these markets, or is there a lot of political and regulatory red tape you have to overcome?
The biggest challenge, I suppose, in every environment, not just Africa, is the political environment, you know, political stability, politics, mm-hmm. and the regulator. Okay. In our example, our biggest threat has been for the past 22 years, I bet you not, it's been the US dollar and whatever exchange rate to the local currency. We worked out the other day, if all the currencies were stable against the US dollar since our inception, the value of the company would now be 2.4 times of what we valued at the moment.
Good grief.
Yeah. So 100% of the group is currently valued at 4 billion rand. 4 billion
mm-hmm.
rand.
Mm-hmm.
So to make a long story short, in a perfect world, but obviously that's a dream world, it doesn't exist. If we didn't have to compete with the devaluation of the currencies in these markets where we operate, it would already be an 8.4 billion organization. But mm-hmm. yeah, so the we can deal with the politics. You go with the flow, like I said, you ride the wave up and down. You've got continuous contact, interaction with the regulator
mm-hmm.
in that country. The problem is most regulators and politics don't keep up with the speed at which technology evolves. That is the biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. So coming out of Namibia, do you think that gave you any advantages? That you weren't sort of maybe in Joburg or, you know, you were perhaps coming from the periphery, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
Do you think that gave you advantages in that you maybe could build this business without people noticing you initially?
Actually, there's a bit of a story there. I had a restraint against me from my old junior days. You know, we sold the company and then Miles and Rolf went off to Angola first. But Skalk Erasmus, who was one of the was also one of the founders of the business. He's currently our CEO.
Mm-hmm.
I stepped down as CEO 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Just to take a bit of a backseat. But we were all involved in the same community in Namibia in one way or the other. So if you're sitting in Namibia, to cross the bridge into Angola is just, you know, a plane ticket
away. Yes, it's quick.
It's close by.
Mm-hmm.
And from us to cross over into Zambia is easy. Instead of flying, look, most flights come through Joburg, but at least Angola borders on the Namibian northern border.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity was there at the time. But perhaps if we were in South Africa and just after the civil war in Angola, maybe if we were South Africans, maybe we wouldn't have been as eager
mm-hmm.
to go there immediately, first give it some time, wait. But yes, the problem with most of the founders of this business are bigger than our brains. So we jump on the plane and we go check out the next place. And you eat funny stuff and you're just exposed to a different environment. You just get the job done.
Yeah. I suppose you have to be very open to all experiences in building a business like this in Africa. Right?
Absolutely.
So tell me about your South African business. How big is it? What are your growth plans in this market?
The business has been growing significantly. South Africa's biggest focus so far has been VSAT. And VSAT, traditional geostationary satellite. But Kali and the team in South Africa has been doing very well to provide VSAT not only as a normal service, but also as a backup for redundancy. So when you've got challenges in power failures or load shedding or vandalism or copper theft or anything like that, you've got a direct link from your customer. Doesn't matter where that customer is, in the bush or remote areas, rural areas, from the shop, from the ATM, back to the satellite, to our teleport. Okay? There's nothing in the middle that can break it because it goes through satellite. That's been a very good market. Unfortunately, recently, Starlink has been hammering us a bit in South Africa. But we have other relationships as well with OneWeb. OneWeb don't go to the market direct like Starlink does. And they believe in partnerships. We're also a OneWeb partner in South Africa.
Okay.
We're doing well on OneWeb. And then most significant in the last year, we've been setting up a global service center, a GSOC, or we can also call it a GNOC, a network operations center here in South Africa. So we've come to realize over time that we need to watch, keep an eye on whatever we've constructed all over Africa. We need to keep an eye on it 24/7, 365. And then with college facilities here in South Africa, we decided to put it here. And so previously we were watching what we were doing in Namibia and Zambia and Angola and Botswana, for example, independently. But there's never been an overall view or a team of people and that could take responsibility for everything that we've deployed through throughout Africa. So that part of the business, that that global service operation center, network operation center, has been established here. It's growing, and it's fulfilling a very, very important role in terms of our Pan-African network.
Okay, so if something goes down in Zambia, you'll know about it here.
Well, our own people in Zambia knows about it, but
we'll get notified.
The operations in South Africa knows about it and escalates it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got a satellite ground station here as well. Okay.
We've got a few antennas, but it's a proper teleport.
Right.
And
satellite providers right across
the entire Africa? So we
whole of Africa.
We're providing services in VSAT, VSAT specifically, except for those countries where we are permanently established now, 15 countries, sub-equatorial Africa, we're providing VSAT product and services to 30 countries in Africa. So the footprint is throughout Africa.
And this VSAT would typically be used by branch offices, by ATMs, by that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, but I think the locality of the customer is important. So yes, if it works well in South Africa for redundancy, even if it's in town or just on the outskirts as a backup.
In fact, there's an ATM right down the road here with the VSAT terminal.
There you go. There you go. So that's been a big focus in South Africa for us. But the remoteness, the more remote the requirement is, VSAT is the way to go. Now we've been on geostationary orbit satellites forever. I think we're on something like 10 or 12 satellites permanently.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And that beams down to the continent.
So you just buy capacity from those geostationary providers as and when you need it.
I think we're only buying capacity on two of them for reselling their service. The other 10, my numbers may be a little bit out, we're actually buying transponder. So we manage it ourselves.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's not just about reselling the bandwidth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you mentioned OneWeb, and now, of course, you obviously have a relationship as well with Starlink, which is the low Earth orbit, for anyone who hasn't heard about it. I don't think there's anybody who hasn't heard about Starlink, but obviously the SpaceX, Elon Musk-owned satellite broadband service. How long have you been working with Starlink, and where have you launched Starlink services together?
Very few people know this, but we constructed, Paratus Telecoms constructed the very first starting teleport in Africa. Maybe a little bit more than 5 years ago. But about 5 years ago, I'm going to have to trust Kali.
Is that also here in Gauteng?
In Cape Town.
West
Cape. Yeah, but okay. That was not a, it was not a communications ground station.
Oh, I see.
It was done under our license with our spectrum. And it was that specific teleport. It's been moved recently. We had to relocate it. But like I said, it's under our license. So Starlink is not in the country legally. But so the consumer business or the reselling of services, that's a different story. But that's what's currently in the political arena. But that's to keep that satellite in a three-dimensional box.
Okay.
So let's call it telemetry. So it would keep the satellite at the correct altitude, left, right, forward, backwards, so that it doesn't fall out of orbit. That's the sole purpose of that teleport. More can't be constructed because it would either have to be under someone else's license or it would have to be a Starlink license. We've been involved in Starlink teleports in Mozambique. They constructed two there. We've been involved in Starlink teleports in Botswana. They constructed.
Do you need one for each country?
Depends on the population size, but but location. Take Botswana for example. Botswana is in the middle of SADC. Okay, so from that from those teleports, you'll take the fastest or the shortest path to Teraco in Joburg, and then from Teraco to the landing stations to the undersea cables, and the same for Botswana. Goes over the Trans-Kalahari fiber. First, the Botswana-Kalahari fiber, which is ours. The Trans-Kalahari fiber, which goes to the Equiano or the Wax Landing Station. So it's central, and it connects then various routes to keep that teleport up and running. The primary function of that teleport is to make the experience better.
Okay.
So if you're in Botswana, and it's low latency, it's lower Earth orbit, signal goes up, comes down, okay? It's not 660 milliseconds like on your geostationary. So it would go up and down. That would be the best you can get in terms of physics on your geo orbits. Low Earth orbits, we're talking about 30 to 40 milliseconds. Now, that's a massive difference when you're comparing geostationary to low Earth orbit. So the closer to home you can put one of these teleports, the better the experience is going to be. And the fastest you can get them to a significant data center or to a landing station, the better. It's about experience. Less milliseconds.
I think a lot of people don't realize that satellite networks like Starlink are very reliant on ground stations and fiber communications on the ground. They think, well, there'll be satellites up there, talk to each other. It's a global network in the sky, but actually much of the communication's happening at ground.
The one can't exist without the other.
Yeah.
And there's unfounded perception that Starlink is going to replace everything, or OneWeb is going to. Look, we've also constructed OneWeb sites in Africa, and we have a relationship with OneWeb, but OneWeb doesn't go direct to the market. They rely on the partnerships.
Yeah.
But fiber will, satellite, irrespective, even LEOs, will never replace fiber. Okay. It's impossible. And also, like I said,
could be argued they need more fiber.
Yeah. The dependency on each other. So you're going to need the fiber infrastructure on the ground. You're going to need the data center. You're going to need the backup power. You're going to need all the infrastructure on the ground because that's how you keep it live. Whether it goes from here to the satellite and then to Europe, or whether it downlinks at a teleport in Nigeria, Rwanda, Botswana, doesn't matter. You need ground infrastructure. And also, people were saying that it's going to take out some of the fixed land products, and it's not so. Actually, there's some good competition. We had an example recently in Botswana where Bofinet, the infrastructure side of Botswana Telecom, Bofinet have been laying fiber forever, like ourselves. So if you had the vision. Or at least the progressive attitude of putting infrastructure in the ground since a few years ago, then you've got proper ground infrastructure like the fibers in place that can actually effectively compete with Starlink or with OneWeb. Bofinet launched a product recently which gives you, on fiber, which gives you a 300 meg download for about 1,000 rand. There's nothing in the Starlink product set or price that can beat that. So it depends on what you've been doing prior to Starlink launching. And remember, we all knew Starlink was coming. And if and OneWeb was coming, and we know Kuiper, Amazon, is coming next year, and all the operators are talking to all of them. If you knew they were coming and you did nothing, shame on you. There's nothing to cry about.
I was having a look at the Starlink availability map before our interview today, and I see that it hasn't been launched in Namibia either yet. Is it similar regulatory issues that, that we're facing here in South Africa around empowerment, or is it something else?
Tarek, I'm gonna repeat the sentence twice. You can only use the second one.
Sorry, folks, we're going to be cutting this next bit.
Trust in politics and the regulator fuck everything up. Or you can bleep out the last part. Okay, let me be nice. I can be diplomatic. Duncan. So, many times the political environment and the regulatory environment is not conducive to the speed of technology evolution.
So what's the diplomatic answer?
Okay, that was the best I could give you. Oh, okay. I can't do better than that.
That's okay.
I can't do better
Leave
than
it
that.
There. I don't think right, you need no, to no, say anymore.
No.
Let me rephrase the question. Should we expect Starlink in Namibia anytime soon?
No. So, no, really, seriousness. Your political environment and your regulatory environment plays a big role. And it's usually, as far as South Africa is concerned, that challenge is very complicated. I recently wrote an opinion piece in one of the major dailies in Namibia. And basically what I said there is the net national benefit of what Starlink offers far outweighs the theoretical advantage of enforcing local
ownership.
Local ownership, local equity ownership. Now, you know, it is a statement that I make, but it's also a statement anybody else can make. And what I'm saying is, if you look at more than 20 other African countries in Africa, they already took that decision. They weighed up the net benefit of putting Starlink or OneWeb or what's next, Kuiper, accommodating it versus local equity partner ownership. They already did that. So it's not my statement. It's something that's already been done by other African countries. In Namibia, they're going to hate me for saying this, but there's no problems in Namibia. The biggest incumbent, I'm sure, is throwing spanner in the works there to keep Starlink out because they see Starlink as a threat. And I, like I said, I think it's an unfounded fear to think that Starlink is going to take you out or OneWeb is going to take you out or whatever's coming next. You've got enough ground infrastructure in place. You've got massive fiber backhauls. You've got base stations. It's complementing what they have already in place. It's as simple as that. As far as the smaller operators are concerned throughout Africa, there's nothing you can do, you know. They can hook on to the bigger ISPs or be absorbed by the bigger ISPs. But like I said, infrastructure across Africa is key. If you haven't been making that infrastructure, and I'm talking massive investments, okay, you're going to sit with a problem. It is what it is. Whether it was the Industrial Revolution in Europe back in the day, I mean, people were very upset about that. I was telling Kali on the way here, whether it was Alexander Graham Bell in, 1857, 150 years ago, and Mr. Watson, when they invented the telephone. I'm sure there were people that were unhappy with Mr. Watson or Mr. Alexander Graham Bell specifically, but it did not stop them from using the telephone eventually.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit like the famous Luddites in the UK when I think it was it automated clothing manufacturing or something. Yeah. I forget the details, but there was also a lot of pushback.
So irrespective of the industry, that's part of the evolution that you go through. Doesn't matter which science it is.
When do you think, I mean, you're very, very close to Starlink. When do you think the whole of Southern Africa is going to be covered and licensed and operating?
No, they can't tell us. We can't tell them. It's entirely up to the governments in those countries.
Okay.
In South Africa, it's up to the South African government. It's up to to ICASA. Mm-hmm. In Namibia, it's up to the Namibian government. It's up to CLAN. Mm-hmm. In Angola, the Angolan government and INACOM. They have to make these decisions. So DRC was awarded the license, so we're going full out in DRC.
Where is Starlink not operating in Southern Africa now?
No, there's still a few countries.
South Africa, Namibia, Angola?
The most notably, the biggest examples would be Angola, Namibia, South Africa.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then we've done so much on satellite technology. Now, I can keep you busy for an hour.
But you have a flight to catch.
Yeah, I can keep you busy for an hour, just what we've done for education so far. Mm-hmm. Recently, we launched EduLink in various African countries where we've got Starlink working. But we can connect schools on geostationary as well. In Namibia, we've been connecting schools for the past 7 years under a wonderful umbrella called EduVision. Mm-hmm. We've connected over 12,000 learners in Namibia already at no cost. Mm-hmm. But that's because of the kind-heartedness of big corporates that supports this initiative. We connect schools, and you've got interactive smart boards that communicates from a teacher in a central location to, let's say, 8 or 9 classes at the same time, grade 11 math or grade 11 physics. Mm-hmm. But you've got access to the same quality teacher. The upliftment and the progress we've seen in those learners within a space of 2 years has been profound, profound. And what we've done just on education in the last 7 years is pretty amazing, but it comes at a high cost. Geostation is expensive, okay? Less bandwidth, more latency, higher cost. So we're obviously looking at ways to make it cheaper, more affordable.
And Starlink is the solution.
Starlink is the solution. Mm-hmm. And Kuiper, Amazon next year, and so on and so on. And, you know, so we've launched EduLink across Africa where the countries are, the countries that we are, and Starlink have a license. Recently, we launched Connect to Care. So Connect to Care is now focusing on the clinics and the villages or the community. So what we try and do is we try and hook all of them onto, say, at least one terminal or one connection. So you would try to hook up the school and the clinic and the village or the community through one link. Mm-hmm. And what works better than a village or a school or a clinic that's in a remote area in the bush? Mm-hmm. What works the best? Satellite works the best. That's just how it is. But we're just hoping to get the licenses, or they get the licenses in all the countries. And get it done, but yeah.
Just lastly on Starlink, you're obviously partnered with them very closely on the ground stations, providing fiber infrastructure.
Construct some of it. Not all of it.
Do you sell Starlink directly to consumers as well?
Yeah, we sell to consumers.
Okay.
So they sell direct. Look, they go into these relationships non-exclusive. Mm-hmm. We don't have an exclusive relationship. MTN, Vodacom, doesn't matter who enters into a relationship with OneWeb or Starlink or Kuiper next year. None of these relationships are exclusive. Okay. You tend to benefit more if you can push massive volumes. Mm-hmm. Okay, then obviously there's a benefit in there. But the reason why Starlink wants a license on their own in every country is because they want to go directly to you, the consumer. And that's why they want it 100%. They want to own it 100%. which is also understandable.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a great business plan, let's say you we're in a partnership together on some great technology, and I own 51% of the shares, or 30%, a significant share of whatever the environment dictates, you know, the political environment or the regulatory environment, and you phone me Sunday night and you're the clever guy, okay, you only sit with 49%. And then you phone me Sunday night or you send me a WhatsApp or personal message and tell me, listen, I've got a plan and it's going to cost $1 billion. Are you in? And then if I'm Larry Ellison on the other side, I know that's how those two operate. And then you would ask me, okay, how much are you in for? Now I'm in for $1 billion. Okay, great, thanks. You know, we don't want to hear about, you wouldn't want me to tell you, okay, I need to go to the bank first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I need to run this past Invesco. Okay, sorry. First I must talk to Group Exco, then Invesco, and then I run it past the board. And then I can tell you if I have the funding available for my 51%. Mm-hmm. That's not how those guys operate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. basically the main motivation behind the shareholding.
Mm-hmm.
If you operate in that league,
yeah,
that kind of technology.
Yeah. Have you met Musk?
Uh-uh.
No.
No. Don't have time.
What's it like to work with? I'll let him know. what's it like to work with the SpaceX or Starlink guys?
I'm going to get into trouble.
You're in big trouble. You're already in trouble.
Look, we deal with all of them. We deal with Google and Meta,
right,
and Starlink, and we deal with all of them.
Yeah.
And they're all monsters. If you benefit in any of these relationships, it was oversight on their part. It's purely coincidental. He must just hang in there and take it. But it's okay. We, you know, it's either you embrace it, everything that comes with it, mm-hmm. or you die.
All right. I want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about where Paratus is going. You're listed in Namibia. Do you have any plans to list the business elsewhere?
Maybe there's a plan in the future
mm-hmm.
to list the whole group.
Where would you do that if you did it?
Probably New York.
New York, okay.
Mm.
Not Joburg.
Mm-mm.
Why?
Just because of what Africa offers us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
More opportunity to raise capital,
yeah,
there.
But, you know.
Better valuation.
Better valuation. I think more. More attractive would be New York. It will draw a lot more attention, positive attention. Mm. And also, you know, again, looking at the political environment, the geographic area, and so on and so on and so on. We're going to attract the most interest day one. And especially if you're an infrastructure deployment, if that is your plan and that is your passion
mm-hmm.
to build out fiber and base stations and data centers across Africa,
mm-hmm.
you are going to see a return on investment. And when you want to attract, say, foreign investment, that's the best place to do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think so.
Makes sense. If the right offer were to come along from one of the big global telcos, would you consider selling?
No, we're having too much fun.
Okay.
Yeah, as soon as you do that.
It's not for sale.
As soon as you do that, then the fun goes out the window.
Yeah. So what's the opportunity still for Paratus in the Southern African region? What are you?
There's still plenty to be built.
You just want to build?
We just build. We're okay. Actually in construction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We happen to sell IP on the side or internet on the side.
Right.
But we like building stuff.
Okay.
I would say we love building, but it's not that it's stuff. So we love infrastructure and we go big.
Yes.
And more infrastructure, sufficient infrastructure is what will win the game
mm-hmm.
later on.
Mm-hmm.
You won't win this game on somebody else's infrastructure. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And a New York listing, I presume, would raise significant money to.
We raised a lot of money in the original listing, mm-hmm. and then we had once or twice we had some rights issues, a right issue, and then recently, Group invested 600 million into Namibia, Paratus Group. And we're not holding back. Namibia is doing extremely well. I can't tell you the numbers right now, but okay, as far as the listed company is concerned, I think our market cap in Namibia is very small still. It's at 1.25 billion.
But that's just the Namibian entity.
That's just the Namibian entity. And we aim to grow that. If you're looking at, we ended our numbers, our revenue for end of June this year, we're over budget. If you look at our monthly, and remember, we're in the annuity income business, we're in the monthly revenue business. If you look at where we're sitting on monthly and our finals that came in for June, I can tell you this, we can smell, we can taste the billion NAM dollar or billion rand turnover mark. We can smell it in Namibia, although the cap is already sitting at 1.25. This is just the beginning for us in Namibia. So we're taking a lot of what we learn and what we experience, successes and failures. Namibia many times is the breeding ground for some of the ideas that we push into the rest of Africa. It's a smaller market. We can still test it. Yeah. If we fail, we can survive. And we can try again and try again and try again.
Will you seek mobile licenses in other markets if the Namibian mobile network is successful? And might you come to South Africa?
No comment.
All right. On that bombshell note, I think we're going to end the interview. Bonnie Harmse is Executive Chairman of Paratus Group. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Duncan, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you. All right.